This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
Fellas.
What's going on?
What's up, G?
What up?
Nothing much.
What's on your mental?
Just looking as we get into 2022, like everybody else, just hoping like it's, you know, continues to get better than the previous year, two and a half years. So, I mean, that's really all it is. I mean, you know, we haven't been together for a couple of weeks because of the holidays.
Yeah. And
I actually got COVID.
Dun, dun, dun.
Welcome to the club.
Man, it was a beast.
The VIP section is over here around the corner.
Nah. The boys had me waiting in line.
Yeah.
I basically spent Christmas recovering.
Yeah, that's a sucky time to have it, too.
That is.
It was, I was quarantined.
Where were you? Basement?
I was in the house. I had my own restroom, had my own bathroom, and I sat there, and it was so bad, even my dog Tiga was like, you got that Rona. Even Tiga was coming in the room, and she'd be like, that's that sick brother, and walk right on out.
When I had it was the same thing. Like, I just kind of posted up in the bonus room. I ended up taking, because our kids' bathroom is connected there, so I took their bathroom. They couldn't use that anymore. They had to use our bathroom, me and my wife's, and so it was just, it drains on you, man. Like, being sequestered like that, like, the only thing I could do is, like, I wake up early in the morning, go for a walk, just because I needed to leave the house and be away from them. But then it was just, man, it was something else, bro.
Not me. I was.
Being inside, that was messing with my mental. I had to get out some.
I was in that thing.
Sleep. It's only so much sleep you can get. It's only so much sleep. It's only so much Squid Games I could watch.
But you've traveled with me. You know I can sleep.
It don't matter. Like, I did the same thing. It's only so much sleep you can get. So
I got it all.
I can tell you.
I binge watched Squid Games the whole time. That was the highlight.
I can tell you when I had it, and it, I don't know how bad it may have gotten, but I know Angie, Steve's wife, just concocted us like silver and this and that and all kinds of ointments and pills and mineral. I don't know what I was taking, but I can tell you, like I said, I don't know what it would have been like, but ours got through pretty quickly. So hopefully she took care of you at the house as well, too.
Let me tell you, so I was on nebulizer, just to keep my lungs. We already have one, just to keep it, because I was coughing and I didn't.
Yeah, the cough is the one.
I didn't want.
Yeah,
the cough, and so doing that, but
do you still have like a slight one, a little bit?
It's been a while, so it's getting better now. When I'm working out, it's starting to get. I would tell you,
I felt that linger for a while after I had it.
I would tell you though, I did lose some weight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
the COVID diet program.
I'm getting lean.
Right.
So it was pretty good.
So it had its benefits.
It had its benefits, and a brother slept. I slept a lot. just switched my mind a little bit. Got the opportunity to go out to the Rose Bowl, and see University of Utah. But I got to go a time to go home, and I went home with Peyton, my oldest. And so we were University of Utah. We're staying downtown. We stayed kind of in between because I wanted to kind of have that time just be with Peyton and just be with my son. So I just didn't want to have the distraction of Steve Smith, former Utah player, out for a bowl game. I just wanted to be, you know, Peyton's dad. Mm-hmm. And so on the way there, we took I took the street. And so went to this little taco place, and it was, you know, you can buy tacos, burritos, you know, burger, whatever. You know, if you've ever been in California has a plethora of mom and pop, hole in the wall, independent places. And so this is a place that I went to, and it was right there on Pico. And so it was a lot of cultures. And one of the interesting things was I was sitting there, and I kind of smiled. grabbed our food. We were sitting out there, and we were just sitting outside, and we were eating. And I asked him, how was it? He was like, yeah, it was good. And so just watching, people watching all the people and all that stuff. And I had a moment, and I was sitting there, and I was remembering what I went through as a kid growing up back home. And Peyton had a moment that he was seeing part of Dad's past. And so on we ate, went to the team hotel. We saw some folks, got our tickets, got our stuff, and then we were driving back. And I had said, you know, I was thinking about it, and I was like, man, when I was sitting there eating that food with Peyton, I was going backwards and remember when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, at some point, I love L.A. It's my home. That's my, you know, when I ask people where their hometown is, Charlotte's the place where I call home. But the place that I call my hometown, where I'm from, man, is L.A. And L.A. taught me a lot. But it also, at times, it damaged me. And I remember I was sitting there and I was like, man, when I was a young pup, I was just sitting there going, will I ever make it out of here? Will this be the extent of me riding a bus, no driver's license? I didn't get my driver's license until I was 21, 22 years old when I was out in Utah. I just remember that and just remember. And when you're sitting there, if somebody rolled up that, you know, from the opposite circle of friends, you had to, that light switch had to go on. Even if you was eating some fries or a burger or taco, that light switch had to go on. That light switch go on. And you can't take that L. Man, you can't get mollywopped and lose your lunch. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that, and I was smiling because now I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at my, you got two generations now. And I'm sitting there, and so we're in the car back, and I told Peyton, I said, you know, sitting there, I remember, I never thought that I'll have a son that I'll be coming back for playing 16 years, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you know what, Dad, what was funny is I was thinking the same thing, but I was thinking the opposite. What would it take? I wonder how would I have handled living here? Would I have been able to make it? And it was just great. He was just like, dang. He says, man, Dad, I don't know how you made it. And it was just really cool for his authenticity to kind of just not justify or make me feel good, but it was a father and a son thinking about one place the same, how I made it and how he was thinking how he can't make it or what it would entail. And he was just so thankful, you know, for those bruises that I experienced. Because of that, I just felt, you know, I just personally feel like to grow up always on high alert, man, that's no way to grow up. That's no way to, like, I wouldn't wish that on someone. And so it was just that cool moment that I had with my son that it wasn't something that I tried to make. It was something that I just experienced it, man. It was really cool to start off the new year to be able to look at your, you know, generation, somebody that will carry on your name, that he gets it. You know, and as y'all are parents with kids that aren't of age of mine, I'm just telling you, when you're sitting down with Tyson or Mia at some point, you're sitting down with Ava at some point, and they go, Dad, I get it. More of anything, he said, Dad, I get you. Hmm. Man, that's the things that I pray for, you know.
What a great story for you to be able to share that with him. And it wasn't planned. It was unannounced. You just stopped. And in that moment, you were reliving what you went through. And you look at Peyton and be like, yo, you don't ever have to do this. But he gets it and he understands. He didn't, oh, whatever, dad, it ain't nothing. You know what I mean? For him to see that is.
Bro, you don't. Yeah. You have no idea. Like, when, I'm not even lying. Like, people walking by, and those people walking by, you just kind of like scratch your head, and, you know, like the way they're walking by, and you got to think about it. It's LA Friday, like 2:30 in the afternoon, right? Fire hydrant leaking and it's water all over the place. Stray dogs, single moms, single dads. Like, it's just every walk of life, every culture. And just seeing it, and it's your hometown, and it's, and your hometown is talking for you. Like, we weren't at Third Street Promenade. We weren't at the highlighted places. We were off the beaten path where, you know, those places that, you know, you, when you hear about people, when you hear about people, when they go back and they say, oh, such and such is from here, and they always hear that, that's, you know, that's what.
Yeah, I think what you said is really, like you said, that's the, I don't want it to go unsaid. Like, when you say that's an answered prayer, like, that's big. That's the things that you do pray about. That's the things when you talk about generational change. Those are the things you want, because at the end of the day, like, it's great. We do the podcast. You, everyone has their own business endeavors. You do all that stuff, and that's fantastic. And you leave a financial legacy, and you do all those things. But that is what you hope for, that you can change your lineage. You can change a generation, and you may have been going, or family tree may have been going one way, and it course corrects and go another. That's really what it's all about. The good days, the bad days, it makes it all worth it when you can know that your children, and that you've left an impact with them. That's all. That is literally what it's about.
Yeah, it was really cool, right? And then I took them to some other places. Took them around the corner. I was showing them one of the duplexes that we grew up in, and I have a driver's license, but I used to drive to school, had a car. Right.
Yeah.
That I bought.
Yeah, I was driving before I had that license too.
Listen to this. I bought a car for $250. Drove it to school. He used to pick up my boy, one of my homeboys, Dwayne, and got pulled over because expired tags. And they didn't take, arrest us. They made us pull over. Mm. We had to catch the bus to school. And then we waited, caught the bus to the car, picked up the car, and then drove it home.
Yeah.
But I used to hide it around the corner and go through this other apartment complex. Yeah. And my son's like, and bro, I was driving like 14, 15, 16 years old. I was driving to school.
Crazy.
Man. No license, no insurance, no nothing.
So that was just in the first week. So just imagine the rest of the year. what you going to be able to dive into, those other conversations you're going to have.
That was pretty cool, though. But, you know, and then Utah Lawson, we were depressed ever since. Man, let me introduce our next guest. This is a guy who's from Flint, Michigan. They say some of the dudes, about 89% of the dudes from Flint, Michigan. Man, they tough as they come.
Yeah, they tough. We tough.
Two-time WBC super middleweight champion, professional boxer. A father, a husband, a son, a nephew, and a guy that's has really overcome a lot of things in his life. So, cut to it. Welcome to the podcast, Anthony Durrell. Thank you for coming.
Thank you guys for having me, man. It's an honor.
Man, we gonna get right into it. Man, we got this. I love these little icebreakers. So, man, just growing up, you know, obviously, get deeper into your story. Man, name your top three boxers growing up.
Muhammad Ali is at the top of the list for me. Okay. You got Sweet P, Pernell Whitaker. Mm-hmm. And Roy Jones, but it's so many people, man. I just can't name.
Well, keep naming them.
Three is a tough number.
Yeah, three a tough number, especially with all the greats that, you know, I came up watching. You know, I just can't name just three.
All right, Mike Tyson. So name some other ones, but tell me why. Tell me why they, you know, what did you admire about them growing up, right? Because for me, Mike Tyson was always that guy. He intimidated you. He was short. He was stocky. He was powerful. He was quick. He was intimidating. But he was also a boxer's boxer. He was a hood boxer. He was whoever watched him, he was that individual. If you were a businessman, he was that intimidating factor. Yes.
He was an entertainer. Like, he gonna give you what you want.
Yes. At the end of the day. Now it's gonna be
we knew what to expect out of Mike Tyson. Yep. We was younger, all our family used to go over my grandfather's house and watch it. And it'd end so quick that we just had the rest of the night just to fool around, you know, party. You know, we wasn't partying like that because we was kids at the end of the
but
day.
You but you staying up late and enjoying yourself.
Up late and all the grown-ups, you know, they'd get smashed or they'd get messed
playing
up.
They playing cards and Keno and talking smack.
The
dominoes.
Old school music.
Yeah.
You know, all of everything. But like I say, Tyson was one of them people you knew what you was getting if you paid the pay-per-view $50 to get it. You knew what you was getting. You first half of the fight is over.
Yeah.
Right. Some fights didn't go like that, but you know, it's boxing. That's what you know, boxing is. And but I'm just happy that, you know, I got to watch them people growing up, you know, and learn a lot from them growing up, especially Ali to Sweet Pea. I mean, I'm not as quick as Sweet Pea or as slick as he was, but you know, you always learn something and try to imitate what he had.
Yeah.
Roy Jones is another guy. He was fast, pound for pound, one of the best, especially back in his day. That was just there. Yeah. When Antonio Tarver knocked Roy Jones out, like, that was one of the saddest moments, you know, for me and my family, because we
he was
idolized.
So dominant before then.
Yeah, we idolized Roy Jones, man. We thought he was just the best and nobody can defeat him, but obviously we was wrong. I think what killed him was he went up to heavyweight and came back down. That really take a toll on your body, especially losing that much weight for a fight of that magnitude.
You're old school. We didn't play golf together and talk smack, so I know you're old school cat, man.
Yeah.
Man, some of your cartoons, your favorite cartoons growing up.
I mean, like with me, I ain't watched a lot of cartoons, but I was like that kid that liked wrestling, like the WWE or WWF back then. That's what it was
used to
called.
Come on Saturday morning, Superstars.
Yeah, but it came on Mondays too, and when it came on Mondays, I used to have to run to the remote because my brother would not let me watch it if he got it first. So I had to run to the remote and turn it to the wrestling. And then we got to watch wrestling because I got there first.
Yeah.
And that's how I know you also because you're calling it wrestling. That's what my grandpa used to say. We about to watch some wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just what it is. That's just how, you know, how I grew up. I wasn't a cartoon guy.
Yeah.
If I did, I probably watched like a Simpsons or Jimmy Neutron type thing. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But I wasn't like a big cartoon guy. I was, you know, more real.
Simpsons used to get you a butt whooping back when that first came out. You weren't allowed to watch that.
What did?
Simpsons, nuh-uh. You couldn't.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, the reason I say cartoons is because I think, I feel like, man, Saturday cartoons. Mm-hmm.
It was.
But like 8, you would start about 7:30, 8 o'clock.
They cut them off by 11:30.
By noon, you was done.
Now, you was watching NBA Inside Stuff right after that.
No.
We were Ahmad Rashad.
No, even before that?
Yeah.
Batman, right?
Oh, yeah. Batman. The animated one. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Same Bat channel.
Yes. Yeah.
Same tune in. Yeah. What? Oh, what was it? Robin. Bro, you talking about Robin had me clowning? Mm-hmm. Or like with Adam West, they say, what are we going to do, Batman? You know, Batman want to say, shut up, Robin, and sit back down.
Man, let me
holy porcupines,
it.
Batman.
Yeah. All right. Man, what's your favorite sandwich? And with that sandwich, what you having with it? You got some chips, fruit?
My favorite sandwich, I'm going to go turkey, lettuce, put some mustard on there, a little mayonnaise and Miracle Whip, you know, light. And yeah, I'm having chips.
What kind of chips?
Like, right now, I don't drink pop really like that. I just drink it sometimes just to get that burn in my throat. Probably have a water.
Pause.
Yeah. I'll probably have a water or something.
Yeah, like yeah, okay.
Water.
I love Cut to It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut to It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut to It.
Facebook?
Cut to It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. CutToItPodcast.com.
All right. Well, we already said it, but I always like to ask, man, where are you from in the place you call your hometown?
Flint, Michigan, baby. I always rep it. I think it molded me to the person that I am. It gave me the toughness and the confidence that I need to go on with life, for sure.
How would you describe growing up in Flint, you know, from your point of view?
It was rough. I mean, not as rough as now. It was definitely rough because just the neighborhood, the property we lived in. I don't know if y'all noticed. No, y'all probably do, but GM was known for Flint, Michigan cars. A lot of people want to start their families here and move here, but now it's gone. But back then we had GM, but it still was, you could tell Flint was on a decline, especially with the murders and everything that was going on back then. We couldn't, you couldn't say Flint without talking about how bad it was. And that's, you know, still to this day, but it just molded me to, like I say, to the person I am today, that and my family. But Flint, man, I always rep it today. I got an A1 on my arms, Flint, Michigan. You know, that's just me. You know, I think everybody from Flint, that's somebody that made it out, will tell you Flint is home. We'll always rep it.
So I got a homeboy that's from Flint, and he told me that Anthony used to mop up dudes at Burston Field House when you was a young kid. And he said that Flint has a boxing lineage that is really not talked about. Speak on that.
It is. You know, Chris Bird came out of Flint. I mean, I don't think too many people give Chris Bird credit for what, you know, he came from his daddy, raised him from a kid, Joe, as coach, him and his mama. But it's rough, man. Flint is rough. And Burson is, you know, one of the dang near the stumping ground that everybody, if that's somebody, done been a Burson, either as hooping, boxing, you know, to anything, football, whatever, you know, they haven't been there, worked out, or played basketball there for sure.
So how did those days at Burson, running through the streets at Flint, how did it shape you?
Just hanging around the people, you know, taught me rights and wrongs. Everything. It's like I say, man, it's home. I mean, just like probably where y'all from, man, it's you know, that's home. You can always go back and feel comfortable there with anything that's going on. And that's how Flint is. I'm still in Michigan. I'm about 15 minutes from Flint, but you know, I try to help Flint get back as much as possible. But it's hard to do it by yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Anything is hard to do by yourself, especially trying to impact a community that has been through a lot of the stuff Flint has been through, you know, whether it's, you know, systemically lack of water, lack of resources, lack of education. It's really tough, man. You know, I think this is. I got why boxing, but I think it's a more in depth question to have is, growing up for you, boxing. For me, it was sports. You know, sometimes you only can make it out with an opportunity, and whatever that is, whether it be somebody wants to be a veterinarian, it doesn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, when you don't have a lot of options, you know, you got to stick to something that can help you propel yourself to give you an opportunity to go to college or get a job or profession or trade that gives you an opportunity to advance yourself, to get out of the lower class of the rat race. We're all in a rat race to some degree, but to the lower class of the rat race. What did boxing mean to you at such a young age?
So my grandfather got us into it. I was 9 when I started. Mm-hmm. So I've been doing it for a long time. My brother
9
was 10
years old.
But 9. Yep, I was 9. My first fight was at 9. I'm 37 now, so God, that's almost 30 years in the sport of boxing. Never had really a childhood. Mm. I guess I live my childhood through my kids now. Mm. We got the side by sides, to four wheelers, to everything, you know. And I see myself in them. I give them an opportunity that I didn't have in other sports, because I don't want my kids to box at all. Mm. Do I want them to learn to defend themselves? Yeah. Boxing is just, I think it's so crooked that I don't want to see my kids go through it. I'm not going to say what I've been through, because I've been fortunate enough to have a smooth career, but what, like my brother been through a bad situation, but I want to see my kids grow up and do something else. And it don't have to be sports, it'd be anything, but something better than what I had.
Can you break that down? Because you're still boxing, right? Mm-hmm. You're 37 years mm-hmm. old. You're still boxing. Why would you not allow your children to box or to do a profession that you're currently still in?
So football, I'll take your sport for example. You guys have a union.
Yeah.
You know, you have somebody looking out for you. You know, you're going to get,
depending on who you ask. Depending on who you ask, there's some guys who would disagree about the union. But you know, I'm just
understand. No, I agree about it, because it's somebody looking after you.
Yeah,
you got the entity itself.
You're going to get what you need. Yeah. You're going to get what you need. In boxing, I have to do everything for myself. Mm. If that's going out to get sponsors, I have to do it for myself. Mm. I don't even care about that. Like, if a sponsor approached me and we're talking good numbers, yeah, we could do it. But I'm not going out to look for nobody. If I'm going to get somebody, they're going to come to me. I'm not going to them. Like, I'm what you want. If not, then I don't care. But it's just, it's that part, the union. You have nobody looking out for you. The pay. Let's take Jake Paul, for example. He haven't fought a real boxer yet, but he's getting paid 6 figures. That was his fourth fight, but he's been getting paid 6 figures since his first fight. Why can't a real boxer get paid that, the same amount of money as him starting out? Like, it's not an even
playing field.
And I got so many questions. I figured we was going to wait to the end, but I got so many questions around that and how that's even filtered out.
It's just disrespectful to boxers, you know, real boxers.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's not a real boxer, but he haven't fought a real boxer yet. He fought MMA fighters and he fought a basketball player. That's not boxing.
No, it's not.
Yeah, so it's a disrespect. I can't go into the NBA and say, let me get a 10-day contract and put LeBron on the bench.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
And without a base mark of anyone's even seeing you play basketball.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? But boxing, I guess, is one of those sports where, you know, you can do that, but it's just disrespectful. Like, yeah. And the network should see it. Like, his pay-per-view numbers was crap. But it's that. It's torturing. You know, when I lose weight and can't eat for a certain amount of time, that's torture. You know, for me, it's torture.
Yeah.
And I'm torturing myself, granted, but it's still torture. I got to do something to entertain thousands and thousands of people. It's
so
still,
someone listening to this would say, based off what you said, and I actually wrote it down. It was going to be a follow up. How unhealthy is cutting weight? But before you answer, I'm going to say, someone listening to this would say, well, you don't have to do this.
You chose.
No one puts a gun to your head and say, lose weight. Right, they're not doing that.
But I can't do what Jake Paul did, going to the NBA. I want to do the NBA. I can't go in there a 10-day contract and get some money. I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I got to do this. If gotcha. This is my job, I have to do it, and I have to be responsible and dedicated to the sport, to the career that I chose. So at the end of the day, I have to do it.
Yeah,
you know, if I want to keep providing for my family and doing what I need to do to succeed in life, I have to do this. So for somebody to say I don't have to, I have to.
Yeah.
This is what I know. I mean, I'm not saying this all I know, but this is what I know. And I want to give my kids another opportunity, a different path to take other than this sport. Because it, like I say, and then you got to look at this. NBA players or football players, and football players was getting done in for a little bit. I think they're starting to grow now with the guaranteed money.
Absolutely.
But basketball players, they're getting $200-something million. Some boxers will never see that. Floyd Mayweather was the exception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would never see $200-something million guaranteed. Canelo is an exception, but you only get certain few. You got to pick that grain of rice out that's good. If not, then you're not going to get $200 million contract guaranteed. You can't get that. So let's find something else to do. I don't care what you do. I didn't want my kids playing football, honestly, I didn't want them playing football or boxing, because with football, it's so many concussions and CTE. Like, I read up on that stuff, CTE that goes around, you know, getting injured. And when you got a concussion, sometimes you don't know, and you still go out there, and it just mess you up more with football. With boxing, you got a concussion. Like, I had a concussion, and I had a headache for a week.
Hmm.
I couldn't even believe I was getting headbutted. You know, I get hit, of course, but it was just – with football, like, you got to sit out. If you got a concussion protocol, you sit out. With boxing, you got to keep going, or you're done. You lost.
Hmm.
So I got to keep going, even though I got a concussion, and keep fighting.
Wow.
I mean, it's I want to go for my kid.
Hmm. So take us through your boxing journey, right? Just that you started at 9 years old. I can't imagine, right? I can't imagine. Like, I look at my kids and see, you know, my son's played travel baseball, and I've seen how that is. It's challenging, especially here in North Carolina. North Carolina is number one in youth soccer, right? It is crazy. I'm in the basketball circuit now with AAU. Living, breathing, can't even take regular holiday trips because spring break or Christmas. Mm-hmm. I mean, day after Thanksgiving, son is playing in Atlanta. Day after Christmas.
You know. But how much, like, it's some football players, or let's say, let's some basketball players who started off right in high school and still made the league.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, well, my thing is, sometimes you got to let a kid be a kid.
Yeah.
Like, my boy and his son, they do travel basketball, travel baseball, so the kid can't be a kid. Mm. Like, when is the point that you say, let's stop and let's get your body a rest?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you still might not do it.
Yeah.
They still might not do it. So I give my kids opportunities to choose what they want to do, But if you do something, you can't quit until that season.
Yeah, you got to commit to the whole season.
After, yep. But if you want to quit after, you can't. I don't care. But you're not. We're not gonna be labeled as quitters in the middle of the season.
Yep.
But at that time, they might start like, "Dang, I like it. Oh, it's getting better and better." Then they're gonna keep going. So it changes their mindset. You know what I'm saying? If you want to do it, you could do it. But I don't want to force them to do it because I still want them to be a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was never a kid. Like, I was gone so much in tournaments and shows and stuff like that. I was never a kid. I always had to go fight and go make weight. So it was always rough with me. Every weekend or week, we'll miss school to go to tournaments for the whole week. You know what I'm saying? So it was never a kid. It was just work.
So it just turned into the norm then. Because you alluded to your brother earlier, but you know your older brother Andre, like he was into it as well.
Yeah, he got a fight coming up soon too. He got the Olympic bronze medal in Olympic. He lost to Triple G. I thought he won it, but he lost. But like I say, it's it was constant, man. Every weekend, every week. I mean, it just all the time. We was running to school, so we'd go to school sweaty. Running to school, we had to do track after school. So it was ongoing like this, man. And I don't want to see my kids do that. I want to see them have a kid life. But once it gets serious, that's when I'll start getting serious. Because it means nothing now, honestly. Youth, anything means nothing. Do you learn? Do you get kind of responsibility? Yeah, but you can get that somewhere else just doing other stuff. You know what I'm saying? I want to really show them that sports is not the only way. Be a kid, you know, because life ain't long. And you got to live your life, you know, to the fullest.
I notice in boxing, less now, but more for the older guys like yourself and obviously older guys than you. A lot of boxers don't really get their big opportunity until after they've participated in the Olympics.
And not even that, because I never went to the Olympics. Okay. So, I went to Olympic Tribes. I forgot what it was. It was some bull crap at the Olympics. They knew who wanted to win. No, seriously.
No, I know. Honestly, like, that's what I'm saying. Like you look at Sugar Ray, Sugar Ray Leonard, right? You look at Mike Tyson. You look at all these guys.
Floyd Mayweather
were guys who have maybe got the bronze or got the silver. They didn't necessarily win, or some have, but they haven't won. And you hear about the disappointment either in the Olympic trials or the Olympics, and then after that they blow up. Why? What is it about the Olympics or Olympic trials?
And it's not even that. It's just your talent.
Just from the outside, like for me looking in, right, that's all I have as a reference, because there really is no televised, internet accessibility of understanding who's coming up in the rankings other than what is either flashed up on TV, put through ESPN or Friday Night Box or Saturday Night Box. Like, it's the developmental piece of boxing seems to lack.
And you got to understand, I should have been, like, I'm not saying I should have been well more known than I am now, but I should have been up there. Like, I had cancer and won a championship. Yeah. That is unheard of. I even pitched this when I won my first championship. I had my boy, which is a white man, but that's one of my best friends. But me, like,
why you said like?
No, and we got one too.
Hey, Joe's offended right now.
No, but I can't talk.
Don't worry, John. Part white too.
Center. Because they're going to throw me off like it ain't nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I got to get somebody else who really can talk to them. So I pitched my story after I won my title to SportsCenter. They denied it so bad, man. And then put something on there, man, that I seen that was
interesting. I really couldn't even, and we don't use the word interesting.
And even the issue there in itself, you have to pitch, you won a championship and you got to pitch your own story.
I got to pitch my own story.
Like, let's just stop there.
Out after cancer and got to pitch my own story. Come on, man. That's unheard of. Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get
down to it. Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
2004, you break your hand while fighting.
Yep. Right?
In the match.
I had surgery on my hands. Yep, I had surgeries on my hands.
So you broke your hand in the match. How did you?
I had bone spurs.
Okay.
In my hands. That's when the.
I had bone spurs in my feet, so yep. I can understand.
I went in my ankle.
I couldn't even lift bags, nothing. Mm. So I went to California and got them shaved down. Mm-hmm. But now I never had a problem with it. 2006.
I had cancer.
Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I dealt with that for 2 years.
And you
radiation,
were
chemotherapy.
And you were training in between.
Sometimes, like I'll run.
Well, first of all, even sometimes, even sometimes, bro, I can't. I'm down 2 weeks with a head cold, so I don't. You know.
Yeah, it was tough. Like cancer is like before I even went into the building, I'm talking about. Throwing up before I even, because I can smell the chemotherapy, and I'm right there before I even get into the building. Mm. I'm like, dang. So I got to go in here. Once I get it, I'm going to throw up, and then, you know, I'm going to feel better. But them next 3 days after I had it, I couldn't do nothing. But I get that every 2 weeks. It was tough, man. It was for me to go through it, for me to say it was tough, it was tough. So I went to a cancer hospital for kids, and seeing all them, it brought me to tears. But man, it's so hard. I don't even understand how the kids do it, but they get through it, and I'm so happy go through that, man, because it's so tough, man. And I know we got a cure for cancer, man. If they coming up with a vaccine for COVID in under a year, they got a cure for cancer, man, period. To me. And then
to a lot of people
ongoing with the thing. I think it was 2012. I got to a motorcycle accident.
Well, hold on. You skipping over 2008, you know, when you suspected of a robbery.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that. 2008. Yeah. That was 2008. I did. They said I robbed a bank for $5,000. I laughed at them, you know, when they pulled me up, because so I'm leaving my house to go get my last chemo treatment, last one.
So you leaving your house to get treatment?
Treatment.
Yeah.
And he saw me. I saw him too, because I looked at him. You know, I looked, you know, and when I looked at him, he got in the back of me. I promise he followed me for about 5 miles.
Yeah, because he was running your plate.
Yep, when he pulled me over, it had to be about 12 cops, and the news was sitting there. And they took me down. I'm laughing like I'm tripping out because they didn't tell me what I was going down for. And then once I got in the car, I knew the police officer. And he's like, yeah, they said you robbed a bank. All right, whatever. And they took me down. I didn't think I was going to spend a night in that joint. Then I went down. Now, when I say it had to be, so many cops came to my cell where they was holding me at, saying, man, we know you didn't do this. I don't know what he pulled you over for, this and that, whoop the whoop. And I mean, they even bringing me different food from what they ate. Like, they bringing me different stuff, like whole different stuff. And then, like, I tried to sue the police station. Nobody would touch it with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. They ain't touching. They wouldn't do it. Like, I don't understand. I never understood why. Like, you slander my character on TV, papers, everything. And when I say nobody would, I didn't even get an apology from them.
Did they ever say why? Why they pulled you over? I mean, outside of you were suspected.
They said, no, they, and I had a gun in the car, but it was my gun. I was registered to me, the gun, but they didn't. They said I robbed the bank, basically. Suspected me robbing the bank.
No.
Yeah. I think it was all because I looked at him crazy. Like, I don't care about that. Like, cop, like, pull me over. I'm straight. Like, mm-hmm. I ain't doing nothing. Pull me over. What you going to do?
Take you to jail.
And I get out.
Yeah. So with all these things, the broken hand. The broken hand, non-Hodgkin's.
The motorcycle accident.
Yeah, the motorcycle accident.
Are you still riding motorcycles?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
I bet you gave that up.
I'm happy to hear
I gave that.
That
a, I, yeah. And you know what? After my accident, I promise, my boy came over. He was riding. I was itching to ride a bike. After I got into an accident, my leg was still messed up and everything. And I had to, I just went down the street and came back because I had an itch to do it. But once I got on, I'm like, I'm done. Like, and that took it all away after I got on that bike and came back. I'm like, oh. I'm done. I don't want
to
do
no it. Broken leg and all the rehab, that didn't do anything. You just had to get one more ride in, huh?
No, but it wasn't a ride. It was like it was on my street, like it was residential street. I had to, because I don't know why, man. It was just a thing. Like I got to do it, and then I did it, and I'm done. Couldn't do it no more. I'm like, yeah, I see why I stayed off of. I'm done.
Go ahead. So with all those things, the broken hand, cancer, being a suspect, motorcycle accident, what keeps you going and not giving up?
My three little ones. I want to show them that, and they know I became champion. They watched the fight the second time I became champion. I want to show them that. I guess it's no quit. When I want to retire, I retire at my own leisure. I want to do it myself. I don't want to have somebody else do it for me. But just no quit, just resilient, and keep pushing. Them guys out there and my wife, man, it keeps me going. You know, I talk to my wife after every fight to see, you know, what I should do and whatnot.
She give
because
me
it's
tips?
At the end of the
wifey give me tips.
It's not tips. It's just, you know, what she said, because she can see more than I can see.
Yeah.
If I change inside the ring, because I'm gonna say, oh, I keep going, but she can see if I change from, you know, how I fight, my fighting style and everything. And, you know, we talk about it, you know, at the end of the day, it's not me anymore. It's us. Mm. You know, if I keep going or not, or should I retire? And I asked her that after when I fought Kyron Davis, I was in camp and I asked her that. She said, just give it a couple more fights because you look good. Mm. But she said, yeah, after the next fight. Yeah, we done.
Take us through a preparation of a fight. You talked about cutting weight, how unhealthy that is. You talked about how you have to go out and seek your own sponsorship. Take us through, you know, with pay-per-view and HBO, we get to see kind of how things are going on and we get to peek into the camps. But what part of what we see for TV, what part of Rocky is really just drama, is so much drama, but what is the actual preparation for boxing really looks like and feels like from a professional boxer?
It's tough, man, because you got to stay dedicated. You get out what you put in boxing, man. At the end of the day, I think it's really everything you do, but boxing, if you doing bad and you partying all the time, it's going to show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's evident. It's evident. But like with me, with the busing weight, with the, you know, you got to stay disciplined. You know, my team, I tell them, you can go out and do what you want. Like, I don't care. As long as you're there when I need you and you're doing what I need at the time that you need to do it, you can do whatever. I don't care. I'm not going to hold you back just because I'm in camp,
yeah,
you know, getting ready.
When you're in camp, you about to, let's just, you know, hypothetically, you about to have a match. When do you start preparing mentally and physically? What, 2 months, so 3 months?
Two and a half months out.
Two and a half months out?
I'm locked in. Yeah, I'm locked in.
So what are you doing
prior? I don't even see my family about 3.5 months, 2.5 months, I don't even see my family.
So in those 2.5 months,
I'm gone.
Like, gone doing
physically,
what?
Yeah.
I'm in camp. Like, I'm They're at home. I'm probably in Florida. Or like the last camp, I was in Vegas. The camp before that, I was in Florida. That was 3 months. So I was gone. I never seen them for 3 months. Mm.
But take us through that training for 3 months.
So I get down there, condition coach down there, meal prep. It ain't even meal prep. I get meals cooked. You know, some people meal prep. My meals is cooked on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Daily. And then I got my head trainer.
What's conditioning?
Conditioning is sprinting. You know, we lift weights early and not heavy weights. We just lift light to get, you know, back into the groove. Mm. Just a whole bunch of like exercise, man. It hurt. That's at the beginning of the camp. When I start boxing, stuff calmed down, but it don't. So Wednesdays and Saturdays, I do no boxing stuff. It's all something different, but it's still working out. It's just to give your brain a rest from boxing and, you know, you thinking about other stuff. So them the days that I do the condition stuff when I start boxing, you know, sparring or boxing other people and like a Tuesday night or something. But them is the condition days. I run and I don't run. 5, 6, 7 miles. I'm not a track star. I'm a boxer. If I can get in the ring and go 12 rounds, I can go 12 rounds with, you know, in a fight. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what it is. I'm not a track star. But some people gotta run to lose weight. I don't have a problem losing weight. Like I'm disciplined when it comes down to losing weight. I don't eat after 7. I'm drinking nothing but water, like water the whole time. And I'm eating what he give me. Some people, it's tough to lose weight. Some people will lose 12 pounds in 2-3 days. And that's tough. That's what get it out of them. You know what I'm saying? If you lose it wrong, that's what we was discussing, losing it wrong or losing it too fast, you know, go downhill. But it's just, boxing is a lot of mental, man. If you could be mentally strong in boxing, man, and do what you need to do, you could definitely succeed in, for sure.
Is that what precluded you from moving up or down?
That's a big.
Yeah, I got a degree. I got all that stuff. High school educated. Yeah. All that stuff. I can't do 12.
I got a GED, but I don't have no diploma.
And we all still here. That's the beauty of it. But is that what precluded you from moving up or down? You mentioned Roy Jones before, like before he fought Tarver, but you've never done that. So what precluded you from moving up or down?
It was just I could make 68 easy, like it wasn't a problem. You know,
you're talking about 168.
Yeah. When people move up, it's generally a problem of you making that weight. You know, I'm coming down probably from 190, probably highest. I remember after cancer, I was 200 or something.
Yeah.
And I had to lose all that weight in 2 months to get back to where I, at 68. But like with me, I don't get too far out of shape. I'm still going to be in shape. I got a gym in the back of my house. So I'm still going to be in shape. I still do little things to keep me ready. But going into camp, you got to get ready to go into camp because it's tough, you know, especially for a big fight. You know what I'm saying? You got to be ready. You got to stay ready so you ain't got to get ready, period.
So now at 37, is your age a benefit? Because you mentioned how hard it is. And with age, is your age a benefit at all?
No, it's getting tougher to make the weight. Honestly, I'm not going to sit here and say it's not. I mean, you lie, you know, it's just stubborn.
No, I want you to catch.
But it still comes off. Last camp, it was easy. Like I usually have a burger. Like, and I really don't eat like burgers and stuff during camp, but I had a burger my last 2 weeks of my camp. Just because I could, like I was on weight, I was straight. Like I can eat it. My metabolism, if I'm over, my metabolism is going to burn that off quick. Mm-hmm. So it was like no problem.
Man, how would you categorize the sport of boxing today?
As far as what though?
As far as good and bad, right? I've seen boxing. I've been a fan of boxing, but I've also dropped off of boxing because of how
you and a lot of people, bro,
how it is, and they're trying to push it back. But from a guy that's in the inside, a participant of the sport, I want to know what do you believe the state of the sport is, because you're participating. Like I'm just a consumer, and just like consumers in anything, my vantage point is skewed, right? My perspective is skewed because I'm not grinding. I'm not dealing with all the stuff that you're dealing with. I'm not seeing how, pause, the sausage is made. I'm just seeing the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the finished product is, you know, you don't really get a true sense of whether the direction of the sport is going good or bad. So that's why I'm asking from you, because think about it. You've been doing it. You've been participating in the sport for 32 years. So you've seen it when you could barely read because you're 9 years old, right? Now you've seen it to the point of where you know what a contract looks like. Just everything that you've been exposed to.
So I got a question for you. How many changes have been made to football since you've been playing?
Man, so many it's hard to keep up with. And that's my job, right?
No, like, understandable. Okay, yep. Now, none have been made to boxing. Why? Like, I don't understand it. Like, why haven't changes been? We need changes. Like, stuff need to be improved. The judging needs to be improved. We need to put judges in a box or give them by themselves with nobody there looking at the TV and judging it by that.
How are they judging it currently right now?
They're right at ringside looking at it. Looking at the fight ringside. Wow. But you got to understand, if the judge is behind me and the guy is in front of me, I hit him.
You don't have every viewpoint.
You can't see it.
Yeah.
You can't see it. But if he's in that booth,
he can see
up at the top with no sound in the, you know, where you can't hear the audience yelling or anything, getting persuaded, it'll be better.
That's the changes I think.
That's one of the changes I think we need. The other changes is finding a way to, and I guess we're doing that, finding a way to see if the fighter is really hurt, having them do the Cupid shuffle, you know, side to side. Yeah. It's the truth. I mean, is it good? Yeah, to some extent, because if you're a ref, you can stop at any time. You can do whatever you want at any time. And like, I don't think that's fair. I'm leaving my life because say if I got a big fight and I'm winning a fight, but this one judge don't like me, he get a fight to the other guy, that messes up my money the whole time. Like if I keep winning, my pay keep going up and up and up and up and up. But if this one judge, life in my hand, I mean, my career is in his hand. I won a fight and everybody's seen it. And these judges give it to the other guy. Like, what are we doing, man?
Yeah.
What are we doing? That's why, but the crowd persuades that. Like the crowd, even if he don't get hit, they see that and then be like, he had to win that round. And then the judges is judging off the last 10 seconds of the fight.
Yeah.
Like if I get off the last 10 seconds, I win a round, but I ain't win the whole round. Come on, man. Yeah. It's a whole lot of things that we need. And we need a union. We need somebody looking after the fighters, but we can't have that because there's so many. It's thousands and thousands of promoters, man. That's all. They got their hand out. And no, we cannot have a union because everybody can't come together and agree on the same thing. We need a person like Floyd, which he's not going to do because why? He's a promoter. And he want his money just like everybody else. And don't nobody want to look after the fighter at the end of the day. It's not the fighter. Nobody's looking after the fighter. They're looking after their for themselves, man.
So, man, the boxing.
I give the boxing really a B to a C plus. Okay. You know how everything is going.
That brother is honest, and he ain't on no grading scale either. Yeah. Ain't no bell curve.
Man, I take that grade though. I take that C plus.
Mickey Ellis,
right.
Man, are they real boxing rivals or is it just for show?
It's just for show, man. Ain't no boxing. I mean, I don't gotta fight him if I don't want to fight him. like with the MMA, you got to fight. If you're going to fight, like Dana going to tell you who you fight, and you got to fight him. Hmm. Boxing, we got this guy. I don't want to fight him. Pick somebody else. That doesn't make no sense, man.
How much? That's like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Wait. How much do you think MMA, UFC, how much has that impacted the popularity of boxing?
Popularity went down in boxing because of MMA. Mm. Seriously. Like UFC, MMA, it's taking over. People want to see knockouts. People want to see the best fight, the best, and we're not giving them that. Mm. We're giving them, you just fight anybody you want to fight.
Mm. Man, what was...
I want to fight. I'll fight anybody. I don't give a hell. Put me in there. Put me in a phone booth, coach. I'm ready.
Yeah. Well, I know you want Alvarez.
I fight anybody. Like, and I do want him because, like, right now, you got to understand, I'm 37 years old. I'm the top five. I'm one of the one of the best super middleweights at 37. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I'm the oldest guy in the top five right now. Oldest. Like, nobody in super middle, I'm the oldest. And I can't keep fighting for nothing. Like,
yeah.
If I keep fighting for nothing, what am I reaching for? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm reaching for nothing. Like, money, oh yeah, we get money. We don't get that. But what am I actually reaching for? Nothing. I'm reaching for air. If I don't fight for a championship, what am I doing? Hmm. End of the day, what am I doing? You play football to play for championships. You don't play football to win a division title. You play football for championships. I want a championship. Forget that. I mean, the money, everybody want money. We understand that. But come on, man. If I'm this close to that belt, I want to grab it, man. I don't want to keep reaching for air. Give me a shot. Give me a shot, coach.
What would that next title mean to you?
I mean, it mean everything. It mean that, you know, I'm still there, you know, and people will see that. With the knockout I had my last fight, I think people are seeing that I'm still, you know, a contender in this weight class.
You knocked the hell out of that dude. Yeah.
Man, a body blow, an uppercut. They'll leave a lasting impression.
Man, that was textbook uppercut. Ding dong, night night. Holler at you later.
I agree. I think that was one of my and I knocked somebody out where he really didn't remember where he was. Like, he asked, did we fight yet? And I told him, yeah. But
you should have
I'm checking you right now.
Hey, you missed a great opportunity. You should tell him, don't worry about it, dog. What was your boxing dreams when you first started?
So my grandfather always said you know, these boys gonna be world champion. That was my dream, to be a world champion. And I succeeded. I have nothing to prove to anybody, but I succeeded being a world champion. I did it twice, me and my brother. And, you know, that was the dream, you know, become world champion.
What do you believe the lasting effects of boxing will have on you?
Right now I'm fine. Mm. Like, the lasting effects,
do you think about it any?
Right now, not really, but I do want to, you know, my mind, when I first played professional, my mind is, you know, I'm going to be the best super middleweight, you know, ever. Like, I'm going to be the top guy. And I still got the opportunity to do that. Especially with me fighting Canelo, I can beat him. I can dethrone him, the king, the pound for pound king. And when I do that, if I can get the opportunity to do that, that'd be my dream. That'd be my legacy.
So you talked about Flint at the beginning. If you were known for one thing in Flint at the end of your life, what do you hope it would be?
Just how much I helped out the city. Nothing to do with sports, just me helping out the city, me trying to bring Flint back up.
Well, man, that's all our time. Man, really appreciate you sitting down with us.
Yeah, of course, man. I appreciate y'all having me, man.
Appreciate you. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., that is me, is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Lebrecht, production coordinator Taylor Robinson. Theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on.
It's on.